listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host of the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. Tonight we have special guest, singer, songwriter, producer, Mike Gerbrandt. Did I say your name right?
You nailed it, bro. Dutch German. You got the hard G on there. That's it.
I tried. Well, it's either Gerbrandt or Gerbrandt.
So yeah, both of those are great. Both of those pass.
Okay, I passed. So how do you pronounce your name? Let me ask you that.
You know, if I'm saying it with my first name, Mike Gerbrandt. But if I'm saying just the last name, Gerbrandt.
Oh, that's interesting. You use both.
That's super weird and does not feel right. And so now that you ask me.
You're like, put me on the spot. I heard talking about Arcadia. Like, where are you originally from?
Santa Clarita actually is my hometown.
Okay.
Most people know where like Magic Mountain is, you know.
Yep,
but now I'm based a little bit east of there, of Arcadia and east of Pasadena. It's called Glendora. Beautiful little pocket. We just love it.
Or my brother actually lives in Glendora, but what's really cool is I grew up in Arcadia and some of my best friends have moved from Arcadia to Glendora. It's a great city. It is the way I describe Glendora is the way Arcadia was when I moved there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Especially right now with this downpour.
Right.
Which is ridiculous, you know, if you're listening and you're not in LA, we're just getting like pummeled right now.
Yes.
3, 4, 5 days of rain. But like these foothills right now are just gorgeous.
That's awesome. And you know what? I always love the day after it rains.
It's
clean, clear skies. There's like nothing like it. So totally. And I love Santa Clarita too. It's got some good vibes and a lot of music people that I know have moved to Santa Clarita. Brent Paschke, who's one of my producing, you know, we teach a producing class. He's Pharrell Williams guitarist, and he's
nice.
So it's cool. Like, I love that you come from these really cool SoCal cities. Let's go back to the very beginning. What was the moment of Zen that made you fall in love with music and want to work in music? It's my favorite.
To the beginning is right.
Yeah, that's right.
For me, the thing was, I was so fortunate, I'm so blessed to, as some do, but some do not, have a parent that really brought them up in music. My dad plays guitar, plays keys, sings, and we were always playing music, whether it was we were actually playing music, jamming, or we had compact discs on, if anyone remembers what CDs are.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Okay, great. So,
ready to go. You know,
maybe right there.
I'm one of those guys. I still buy.
I know I have, you know what? I literally have in the garage right now. I could pull out like Foreigner. I could pull out MJ's Bad.
That's right.
In those, remember those black, it was like a fabric case. You would unzip it and it held like, it held like 10 or 12. I have like two of those in the garage. Anyway, so it's kind of a joke, but it's not. Music's kind of like my first language, and then English, and then I do have a little Spanish under my belt. But music first, because that I was literally, and that's kind of how I've taught my kids as well. It's just like to where the goal is, it's inherent, because it's like it is the world's greatest language. And it was just always happening. So I was plunking on keys. You know, piano is my first love, my first instrument.
What kind of music dad playing you, like, just to listen? Like, what were your first early memories of listening to music?
Okay, sure. I already referenced MJ, Michael Jackson. I mean,
right?
Where would we be without his stuff? So my music consumption, which is not what we called it back then in the 80s at all. So that would have consisted of like Chicago, Foreigner, I said already, Beatles, Big Time.
Yes.
Something interesting, like, and I don't even know, kind of, maybe part of this was Amadeus, the movie.
Love that movie. I love
right.
that.
Exactly. This entire, we could do this entire hour just on that movie, obviously, right? So many of us love that movie. I think, and what was that, maybe 85, but, and I mean, so I was so small, but I think I would just like see parts of it and just was totally enamored, just like fell in love. And so my dad and I would, we'd be rocking out to stuff, but then I also would go kind of on my own time. I'd sit at the piano and plunk out classical stuff.
That's awesome.
It wasn't too long before I was like, so I definitely, I'm grateful for that in just in general, just the fostering, environment of music where it was just so free. And so it didn't take long as I continued to do that. I started putting other piano pieces up and other classical and Baroque and all, you know, everything from yesteryear.
Yes. That's all the classics, as they say, but I mean,
yeah,
those are highly influential as far as writing, like you, because you're ingesting. I mean, I'm sure you're like this too, because I play piano and guitar too, and it's like when I look at the piano, I always see shapes of chords, and
yeah,
if I'm learning a piece, I'm like taking in the shapes and understanding, oh, these are this is what everybody's going to, and almost subconsciously, I'm not thinking about it when I'm writing, but subconsciously I will write something that is pulling something from one of those, either a composer or a rock song or a
absolutely
Beatles, that you don't really.
You could put it this way: if we don't allow the masters back then to inform like our phrasing in particular,
yes,
then we're just kind of like, okay, just triads all day, just basic triads. But yeah, a lot of that was going on from early on for me. And then I just kind of devoted a lot of self-study at that point, you know, to theory and then got into jazz in high school. And
did you study like privately? Did you start a band? Did you do any of that?
Oh, it was the school of hard rocks, baby.
Awesome.
I think, so actually how we met very recently, I'll just name drop and say, you know, Steve Levitt.
Yeah.
The funny thing is he and I were really in our first like serious band together.
That's awesome.
And it was like, I'm not kidding you, it was a Euro pop. It was basically like a Euro pop, like synth kind of. Yeah, I know.
It was like new wave, or would you say like, it was like, I mean, I don't even know. I would say your rhythmics, but that's not really Euro. I mean, it is, but it's not.
I mean, more like along the lines of like Duran Duran, Depeche Mode.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But like lighter, more positive sound than kind of the heaviness. But, right. But the funny thing, and this was Santa Clarita, by the way. So, like I said, my hometown, I go over to his house for the first time. And this is like, I want to say, he could correct me on this, I think it's 89. It may have even been 88. And I'm like small, 6 or 7. It blew my mind because, again, late 80s, right? And I go into his house, and in the like spare room of the like downstairs, like bedroom, wall to wall, just like candy land, you know, going to a kid in a candy shop musically. Because he's got all these instruments, all these synthesizers, electric drums, which at that point I had not been, I had, you know, seen him, or like back then it was like I'd seen it something in like a magazine, or maybe caught an electric drum kit like on TV somewhere. This was in person. I'm just like, what? And yeah, that was just, I remember that vividly. Just, and he, at that time, he's just a few years older than me. He was already messing with MIDI at that time as like a,
really?
Like a 10 or 11 year old. Yeah. They had just all this yummy stuff.
That's not normal. It's like,
it's not normal. Yeah.
In the music as well. Or is it just like he had the drive and he just wanted to have,
he was super into music, but yeah, but that was a little later, like 95, I think 95 and 96 when we had like a, a Euro pop, like synth pop band. It was great. And then I kind of went from that to kind of prog metal band. I know it's a bit of a jump.
That's a huge jump.
It's a huge jump, but that was just like the product of basically I start high school and then I meet this older dude who's ripping guitar and like, you know, at the school, at our high school, just, you know, I immediately kind of idolized him because he got up on his, he brought his half stack and put it in his Ford Ranger, put it in the back of his truck, and he's busting the Star Spangled Banner like Hendrix, you know.
Wow.
At like lunchtime or something. So I was just like, I got to know this guy. So we had a band together a few years. And then from there went to, so in other words, it was kind of like a decade of, I was just never not in a band. So probably four, it was a run of a decade within like four bands. The third one was kind of more like, they actually called us like the Christian Rush because we were like the Christian Rush.
That's awesome.
It was basically sounded exactly like Rush, but, yeah, so much fun. Really good stuff.
No, it's cool. It's like when I look back at it now, I started so late with like I started singing all my life at a very young age, started doing a lot of professional stuff. But you know, it's like I didn't get into the band thing till college. And when I would see people in bands in high school, like I'd hang out with friends and they'd be ripping on guitar and I was always just like, yo, whatever this is awesome. Like this
right.
Feel cool being around it. Like, did you just catch that wind way early and you were just like, this is the world I want to be in. I want to be around this. Like, my, like, colleagues basically starting to play music together.
Sure, sure. Well, again, you know, because it was my dad bringing me up playing, you know, I think around that same time, or that I said when I first met Steve Levitt, and we met actually because my dad's now retired, but he's a chiropractor. His mom went to my dad. She's done, as you know, she's done the crazy in the stunt industry. I mean, she's top of the heat stunt industry. And she went to him. So, you know, they meet and stuff. And then, oh, bring him over, you know. So we meet and my mind is blown by all this world of music in this room. And then we start making music together. But it was, again, like inherent because, like, my dad and I were just like, can't scratch fever, just like for an hour. You know what I mean?
Amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah. So like I just, rare. You know, kind of like a drug early, like there's no way I was just going to not do that anymore. So.
Well, it's, what's cool is that you found it with family first.
Right. Right.
Thought out friendships that were going in those directions. Cause like, totally. For me, it was like, it was weird. Like I had a lot of friends that were in bands, but like, some of them weren't making the best music. So it was like, yeah, this is not cool, but it is cool because they're playing guitars and they're playing drums.
Yeah, yeah.
But the songs were just like not great songs. You know what I mean? They weren't a great band. And it's like, I always kind of was like, oh, that's cool. But
yeah,
it's not professional, you know, like on another level, like when you turn on MTV. And then I got to music school in college and it was like, oh, wow, this is like legit musicians playing in bands. And like I would come back from a music lesson and there'd be like an 8-piece funk band in my living room.
Yeah,
like,
man. Love that.
What is this? This is so cool. But again, it was that feeling of just, you feel cool when you're around musicians. Cause I still feel like musicians are the coolest. They're just on the level, they're in touch with something and whatever that is, it never makes them feel so big. I mean, maybe at times it does, but really, it's the vastness of music that we love that kind of centers us, that if somebody's a musician or loves music, we immediately have 1,000 records we can talk about, which is kind of fascinating, like that you can just
definitely
write with somebody or play music with somebody and immediately have like a kinship. So when did you know you wanted to do this full time? Seriously, this was your life? Like, because that's a different path too. It's like, oh, this is fun. Oh, this is what I want to do with my life. Those are two different paths.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I think that time of like through my teenage years, well, there's something that happens. This is funny. What did I see? I saw an ad. What did I see? Something comical, but like satirical that had to do with AI and had to do with like, we're going to eliminate the need for struggle. We are going to eliminate even the need for conversation. No more misunderstandings, no more this, no more that. You get where that's going.
Yeah, right.
And like when you play music with others, not only is that, again, that it's a language, but you are participating and like co-creating, and you're participating in the natural, but also in the divine. It really is. Paul McCartney. So Paul McCartney,
right?
You hear him talk about how, you know, waking up from a dream that his mother came to him, you know, yeah. And he goes to the piano, and how he talks about that is not normal. It's not like, I should say, it's not a down to earth thing. When you hear him talk about that, I don't want to quote, and then someone's like, he didn't say that, because that's dangerous ground. But when you go listen to interviews about that, it's very much like he understands there's more than just what we're seeing, and there's more than just, you know, notes being played and harmonies being put together, and that's it, you know. So it's crazy. It's a special thing.
You'll love this, because when I was doing my first record, I was working with a great engineer named Daryl Thorpe, and Daryl's gone on to do a lot of great things with Radiohead and Beck. And
for sure.
We were friends. And when I was mastering my first record, he came into the studio and he was like, you'll never guess who's across the hall. And I said, what do you mean? And he's like, I'm not supposed to tell you, but you're working across the hall. So like, because it's a closed session, but you're working across the hall because your client, you're across the hall. And he's like, I should tell you, Paul McCartney's across the hall. And I said, what? And I totally did in the lane, like, put, like across the room. I was like, are you kidding me? And he's like, yeah, so like if you want to make extra trips to get water or the bathroom, you may catch him. And so like I literally did. Like I kind of like kept going outside and trying to catch him while we were mastering our record. And like what I didn't realize is like I was trying to catch him, and then I walked back and his door was open. And I just saw him, and he just went like that. And I slammed into the door because I couldn't believe I actually saw him. Cause like I went out probably 20 times. No joke. Like,
yeah.
I'm gonna go get some more water. I'll be back.
In other words, you did what you had to do.
You did what you have to do. But what was really cool is like after like walking 20 times, the door was opening and it would just slowly close. And he was hearing like 3 seconds of our music.
Wow.
And one of the times he stopped, he said, hey man, sounds pretty good in there. What you doing? And I was like, I'm making a record. And I remember not being able to verbalize.
Yeah.
I was like, my record, I'm like studio. Like I was just like talking like a caveman. And long story short, I was just like, music, bands, record.
Wow.
Like I was, and long story short, he was doing Chaos and Creation in the backyard and with Nigel Goodrich. And it was just the two of them in the studio. Actually, there was one session where there were a couple times, but there was one session where they had band people that I'd never saw them. And then I got to hear, he kind of invited me into the studio, and I got to hear Jenny Wren and English Tea before the world's heard it.
Shoot,
but
this
was what was cool about it. It was like, he was talking about things with Nigel, and you know, like I was just like a fly in the room, like what you dream this could be. And like he was still going for it, like meaning searching for it, like maybe we should do this. And I'm like, this guy has so many hit records and he's still searching for it. Like,
yes,
that was the coolest. And he still is kind of like that. He's still searching for it.
Yeah.
And long story short, I let myself out of the room. I was like, this was cool. Thank you. And then like I ran into him again right after his Hollywood Bowl show.
And, whoa.
And actually, you can see it up here. I had my ticket stub with me.
Okay.
This is my Wall of Paul, actually. These are 3 different concerts that I saw Paul McCartney. And the one in the middle was at the Hollywood Bowl. And I was driving home and I was on the phone with my girlfriend. And like I saw this bus and all these people were holding records, like 7 or 8 people, not many people, chasing after the bus. And I said, oh my God, honey, I think this is Paul McCartney's bus. So I like swerved the car, got out. 5 people were like getting the record signed. And I was like, Paul, you and I were at Ocean Way Studios. You were doing Chaos and Creation in the backyard. We met. And he was like, that was a long time ago, man. And I was like, Yeah, it was. I said, I don't have anything, so my ticket stub, you think you can sign it? And he signed my ticket stub. And so the next night, back to the Hollywood Bowl, and I got this concert poster because I didn't get it that night. And I said, and it's so cool because it has his signature on the poster right here. And then the stub has his real signature right above it.
Wild.
And it just, it made my whole, I mean, just to be around him in a studio and then get to meet him again. Like I hope I get to meet him one more time, but I'm counting on it just because he's my favorite Beatle. So I love that he's a huge influence on you and you know all the same stories that I do because it's a testament to your songwriting. I know when somebody talks about the same songwriters and the same stories that their music's already going to be good because
you're
I mean, so what
and you went and mentioned Radiohead for sure. That was by the time, you know, from the first time, I think Paranoid Android was the first song I ever heard. Because it, you know, it had just come out and a buddy's like, dude, and I'm like,
have you seen the new Jeff Buckley documentary by chance?
I haven't.
Love this. You're going to love this. I got
okay.
You. So Radiohead saw Jeff Buckley perform in New York and they were so moved by it. They wrote Fake Plastic Trees that night.
Okay.
So they saw Jeff Buckley and then he like Tom York.
Makes so much sense.
Yeah. And it makes so much sense. And it's like in this HBO documentary, if you got to see it, cause you'll love it. Cause it's Jeff Buckley. But I was like, man, I've never heard that story and always wanted to know what was the inspiration behind that song. And it makes so much sense that it was Jeff Buckley because it's like such a Jeff Buckley vibe, but it's such a Radiohead song that is one of the greatest ever written. It's one of the greatest songs ever written. And it's like, you know, what I love about that band is they keep changing. They keep changing album to album. And it's like, they're still searching for it. You know,
they change album to album and yet they're always unmistakably them.
Yes.
You know, how sometimes a band will evolve, but it's like, you kind of went out here and it's too much or it's too little or whatever.
Well, let's talk about that. You heard Paranoid Android. How did that change or shift your songwriting or your concept of being in a band?
Yeah, sure. I think I am a self-professed guilty. Say guilty. Just say it real quick.
Guilty.
I'm guilty for being like a chords fiend. Like I'm absolutely crazy about, you know, chords and just harmony and how we use harmony. And, you know, for those listening, by the way, it's like a lot of time, you know, harmony just as a term is thought of just like, oh, you know, it's when there's harmony, vocals come in, you know, harmonizing with like that melody in the chorus or something. But harmony is anytime there's more than one note.
Yes.
Right. So it's like all and then you multiply that however many notes are going on and you just have these really like truly mathematically endless possibilities.
Yeah.
We really do have endless possibilities. That's why it like often bugs me that a whole lot of music out there is just like,
yes,
so repetitive, hitting you with the same things all the time. Right.
Totally.
But I guess to answer your question, like that song was a pivoting point for sure. Because, you know, by the end of it, you're just like, okay. Actually, I was listening to Jacob Collier, if you know this kid, right?
Yeah.
So I was listening to him on one point the other night. Oh, harmony. He was talking about harmony as well. But, you know, I love this kid, how he's so optimistic, I guess I would say, but he's just so uplifting and encouraging, right? So he was talking a little about AI. Because, you know, a whole like just the reality of like so many songwriters being just scared right now or like or just feeling defeated or feeling like it's futile. Right. It is not. Keep going. Keep songwriting. Keep getting better.
Yeah.
Hone your craft. So one little comment he made was so great about originality. And that was, if it's OK, you did a pretty good Liverpool accent. I'm going to go for just.
I like it.
I'm going to go for just, you know, London from his little room in London. So with creativity and you talk about originality, there is nothing new under the sun, like they say, but they're actually, you're pulling from old things and you're making old things. You're doing it in a new way. So it's not that you have to be completely new thing. No one's ever heard of, but yeah. So I'll stop there with the accent.
No, That was great. And I know,
Of course I can't, we can't recommend him more highly, to anyone that wants to grow in music and listen to great music. I mean, it's just so thick. It's so lush and crazy and cool. So, but hopefully that answered your question. Going back to just mentioning Chicago again, because from early for me, they were a huge influence.
Yeah, they're just impressive too for what they do.
Yeah, like compositionally, man. I was like, I want to do this.
S2. You must have been into like I love like I remember listening to Styx, and that was like, whoa, this is wild. I've never
heard yeah.
sounds like this.
Yeah, like, I think I saw them 3 times live.
I've seen them once, and I kind of think they're one of the most amazing bands. And it's like, I wish I saw Queen for the same reason, because they were doing the same thing. They were just doing
absolutely
the, like, hey, let's make songs just be crazy and also like affect you in a positive way with melody and arrangements. And you
right.
know, so it's one of those things where, I feel like music is colorful and it should be all the colors in a palette. And that's what I love about musicians, because it's like, oh, what colors did you use for this? And it's sure. like, let me show you. And it doesn't have to be the craziest thing, because I will stand frozen when somebody plays me an acoustic song that they wrote that just is crafted well. And it's like,
absolutely.
Such a good song.
Yeah. And it is that it's the craft. It's crafting it to the point where you now feel like this is what it's supposed to be. This is what is how the fruit of what this song is supposed to be. I talk with my students. I teach some music. I don't know if that part was even in the bio or whatnot. So something I've recently been talking about, this is not like earth shattering. Like, how did he come up with this? But the refresh symbol, if you picture the refresh symbol with the arrow, so it's a loop. And I just call it the could be, should be loop. Okay. And we do this whether we know where we're at in the loop or not, but we're constantly going round and round about what should be. Okay. I play this chord, like, what could be really first. If you're thinking about an initial idea, this could be, this could be, you're playing this chord. You're singing this melody, ba, ba, da, da, ba, 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 ba. Or I could go, ba, 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 ba. Ba, 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 which is a pretty big difference. Yeah. I only changed like 2 notes, all that to say, then you come around the loop. What should it be? And that's crazy. That part is crazy, because there's those moments that are just that. That's when you kind of get a little tingle. Like there's a magic moment of like, that's what it should be.
I also think, just to also expand on that, I think there's that part of it to create it. And then it's like, okay, it's set. And then when you record it, it's like also set, but it takes on a little bit of new life, but it's
sure.
still set.
The loop happens once again. Yeah.
Recorded, it takes on a new life live. And I find myself like, I record a lot of my shows because I'm always searching for new melodies in my own songs. Like sing them, new notes. And it's like when I find one, like I'll listen to a recording and be like, oh my God, I love that. I'm going to do that every time. And it's
absolutely.
Like, you don't find those unless you're searching. But I think it's amazing that there's a part of it where it's like, I create it. Okay, this is the form. This is the exact model. I'm going to record it. I'm going to use this as the map to record it. Oh, some new things happen. And then once it's done being recorded, it takes on another life being live and performed.
Right.
And I think that's what's amazing about music is like, it could have been just the one thing and it was still living and breathing, but it took all these forms. It freezes itself in time. And it's like, here is what should be the form. And then here's what it's going to be live if you experience it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that loop goes on and on. And that's part of the beauty of it too. I don't mean to be all like, parroting.
No, I love it.
Being a parrot saying the dreaded two letters AI again, but it's what I think what's really cool about that, what you're getting at when you said the word live, because there's this flood of, because we all know, like we go and we see music live. It's just a heightened, it's a heightened experience, and it's exponential as far as, where it takes us, and then there's a communal aspect. But yeah, what's I love live versions of stuff because you just get all these varying, you know, sometimes there's been, I won't necessarily say who, because this is like, this is a little bit more of a negative. Like there's a couple bands I love, so love them. And then I saw them live and I was like, eh.
Interesting.
They played the songs perfectly, but there was like no connection really between songs. They didn't really say anything other than like, this is about to get real or something, you know, it's whatever, just like non sequitur or just things that you're just like,
funny you say that. Cause I have a theory about that. It's like, I feel like a record makes a band sound better or worse than what they are live. So it's like that record that you loved made that band sound better. So when you saw them, it just didn't have the same thing that maybe the record did. And then when you see a great band, I feel like the best bands always sound worse on a record. And then when you see them live, you're like, dude, I can't even put that into words. And it's like when you see a band like a Radiohead, or for me, it's also Dave Matthews Band, or like buddy that's like, you know, blues, funk, anything like that, you know, Stevie Wonder, whoever it is.
Oh, case in point to what you're saying. Wolfpack, baby.
Wolfpack, exactly. Like
unbelievable live.
Oh my God, this is what music is all
about. Some of the greatest showmen in the world.
Yes.
Really. Cause they're nailing, like the music is amazing. And it's like what someone somewhere said, like, this is Olympic style or Olympic level funk. Yeah. I love that.
No, and it really is. But it's like
there's showmanship and like you're laughing, you're almost crying, you're just like, you just don't know what to expect. It's really great. So,
well, let's play something of yours. What do you want to play first?
We're going to play something of mine.
Yes. We talked all this music. We might as well play some of your songs.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I sent you three. I would say let's do This Emotion first.
And this is solo, right? This is your solo stuff?
Yes, yeah. So I wrote and produced these, yeah. And this you can find, I guess we'll do the first two are on BMG.
All right, here's
but they're on streaming. I mean, they're on the internets.
All right. They're on the World Wide Web.
Yes, they're out there.
Here's This Emotion by Mike Gerbrandt.
if you're not sweating yet, dude, if you're not sweating.
Slamming, bro. That was so good. Dude, this is like Prince meets Michael McDonald meets Wolfpack. Tell me those were the three influences. It had to be.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God. It's just.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Dude, so talk to me about this track. Who's playing bass? Is that you playing bass? Who's playing bass?
So I, not to be that guy, but I played everything on this.
Wow.
So I wanted.
Insane, bro. It's insane. Dude,
thank you. Thank you. Wow. I wanted to do something that was like, if like one of the tracks that almost made Off the Wall, but today.
Oh, I love that. I love.
You know what I mean? But I love how you caught that right away, the Michael McDonald thing. I was even tempted. Doobie Brothers, also Steely Dan.
Yes.
Now we just went into the whole, the rest of this is going to be on them, right?
Yes.
But I was talking to my guy at BMG about that. And I was just like, is it too much? Cause I'm like fully going there. And he's like, no, actually just leave it. Like do it. At first I was doing those vocals placeholder. Like, it was either going to be like maybe a guest or something. And he's like, no, this is it. Just leave it as is.
Slap back play on the vocal. It's like, oh man, this is just oozing that vibe, dude. It's great.
I was tempted to do a moniker or just, you know, like put a name on there, like featuring like Micah McDobble. And so just certain people would be like, okay.
You know, what's funny is I did a show with John Mayer at Hotel Cafe. Okay. And it was so funny because we got to talk for an hour before we played.
Wow.
He did a Michael McDonald impression. Like he has a really great.
Oh, he is the guy to do that.
And dude, it was kind of spot on. I was like, he was like doing it. And I was like, man, your Michael McDonald is actually pretty like spot on. And he started singing all the yacht rock stuff.
I love it.
Like, dude, I wouldn't have thought that, but it was like, yo, you kind of nailed that. But, you know, I got to tell you, your Michael McDonald vocal impression on that is even better than his Michael McDonald impression.
No, eat that, John. Eat it, John.
Arrangement and the arrangement of the song, sophisticated, funky.
Oh, appreciate it.
Feel good music. Tell me what your approach was with all of this, because, man, the hits are amazing.
Oh, man, thank you.
Really, really badass.
I think often the temptation, or maybe I don't know, maybe a better word, like the pitfall, when I'm kind of like ADHD kid, and I'm writing and stuff, and then just like ideas, and it's like you want to do all these things, and I mean, you hear that in the music, but it, you know, thank God for being able to do this for years and years, because you hone and you hone the craft like we've talked about. So I think a pitfall can be where you start to lose people is just that epic, or, you know, that age old, like it factor starts to go away. So you have to just be asking yourself at every turn and at every section, like, do I still just want to shake my booty?
Yeah. Yes. You know? Yes. Yes. Is the answer to that.
Yeah. And that term, of course, does not apply to a lot of stuff like that's not like danceable, let's say. So if we're framing that like to a ballad, I'm thinking like I actually probably should have, maybe we do this, you know, another time and we'll do like a slower one, but the next two you can also kind of shake your booty to. But yeah, I guess, yeah, you just have to ask that question. I guess my approach is always I think I can boil down, and I'm like asking like, what's the right surprise?
Yes.
So like, you've probably heard, I would imagine, I would guess that you've heard like Sting interviews where he talks about the word surprise, right? What did he say like recently in one, like, if I'm not surprised in the first eight bars, like I'm turning it to something else.
And then I think about it, like, I don't think about surprises as much as fireworks, because like fireworks gives you that, oh shit, like a surprise in music can almost be like bam, you know what I mean? But that's not necessarily going to give that same effect as like a fireworks is going to make you like marvel.
Totally. Yeah, they're right. In other words, they always look different depending on the context, like the song, the style, genre, everything. because
I tell you, I caught a lot of your mixed stuff too, like your panning, like, dude, you did sounds and like, man, I caught all that and I was like, dude, this is so bad.
Panning is a must, baby.
Oh, it's great. Well, it's like, you know what I like is like, and let's be honest, when we make music, we make music for people that love to listen to music. And when people listen to music and catch all the things, there's like a bond there. It's like, oh, you caught it. You caught all the details. The that most people won't catch because they're listening on their cell phone. And it's like, I've got huge monitors sitting here. It's like, you hear.
Ooh.
John is doing all the things.
You got a maid right there, sitting right there. Yes.
But it's nice and it's refreshing when an artist like yourself makes something, crafts it well.
I appreciate it.
The details, because like, that's what pushes me to keep doing the same thing. It's like, it just doesn't happen as much because of what you just said, all the pop music is like, you know, it's just not that. And it's
now let's be fair. Not all of pop music.
Right.
We know there's some good stuff happening. Almost single-handedly. I mean, there's so much that truly is great. And Access, of course, has now completely, it's a game changer than when we were little. We were talking about the World Wide Web. No, but the thing is it Radical or is it Eternal? I think it's Radical Optimism, Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
Amazing pop album.
Incredible.
Fire.
Awesome. And you know what? I don't know if you probably caught the Charlie Puth NAMM panel. Did you see that by chance?
Oh, yeah. Part of it. Yes. Yes.
Dude, I mean, that guy is doing cool shit for his.
I love it. I love how he's taking it all the way back and even naming Peter Gabriel.
Yes. Yes.
Like he's saying he's Steve Winwood. Peter Gabriel is talking about the sounds they use. I'm like, yes. Yes, bro. Yeah. Like, it's great. It's great stuff.
It's like you see. He's speaking the language.
He's a monster.
Phil Collins was like a major influence on, I think, the tune, the single is Changes, I think is the song. And it's like, yo, I love when you show me your record collection and your record that you're making. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like what you just did. It's like, oh man, we have the same records and you just, that's what's cool, I think, about musicians and creators. It's like, we have the same records. We can take the same influences and we're going to make two different songs that are going to be completely different things, but they're going to speak to those influences.
Those flavors are there.
That's what's amazing. It's like,
yeah,
there are no songwriters that are going to make the same thing. Even if you're influenced by all the same people, you're never going to make the same thing.
Right, right.
AI will not be able to do. It'll just regurgitate what's already been done. It'll make the same thing sound uninteresting, but you take two songwriters, it would be a cool experiment to actually do, to like take two songwriters and AI and be like, make a song about trees with Prince, Wolfpack, and Michael McDonald, you know, like as influences, and see what comes out of it. And like, you know, yeah, AI can turn it out in 5 minutes, but that's not like that. Who cares about that? Like,
right.
Good, you know what I mean? Like,
just sitting here looking at the trees. Gotta give me some sap.
Your impression is really better than Mayer's. That's a huge compliment. He had crown for the Michael McDonald.
Hand me the bottle. Give me some sap. It's coming out. That could go. That could fly.
Well, let me ask you now. This brings me to our next question. Who are
To add to that real quick, the serious students, or I should say the serious songwriters that of my students, when it's like, when they're like getting to, when they're at a certain level and they're like super hungry, without fail, one of the things for sure I have them do is just go play What a Fool Believes.
Yeah, that's a great song.
And from time to time, I'm super proud, like they already know it. And I'm like, yes, okay, you're in the right place. But sometimes they sit down and they come back and like the following week or in 2 weeks, and they're just like, how did I not know?
Yes. And you're like, welcome. Welcome.
Welcome. Okay, I'm sorry. So your next question, I'm sorry.
No, so like, you know, you're influenced on by Michael McDonald on that. Who are some of your favorite singers? You said Michael Jackson, but like singers that you were like, oh my God, this stops time for me. Who is that?
Woo!
Give me three.
Okay, so I'd be 12. I didn't really sing much. You know, growing up in music, like I said, I was you know playing music all the time and all that, but didn't really like I guess I didn't really say to myself like, oh, like I'm going to sing. Like I can sing till I was like 12-ish.
Right.
And what I did was I'd go in my room, I'd lock the door, and I'd put on Mariah Carey Music Box.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Right. And so I attribute a whole lot of my like
early Mariah was
yeah
just unreal.
So I attribute a whole lot of my like need for, you know, riffing and just like, you know, just getting gritty like on the, you know, on all those parts. But Whitney for sure.
Oh yeah.
And then Stevie. It's those three for me.
Wow, great.
It's Mariah, it's Whitney, and it's Stevie.
Well, okay, I have to take you to, I did a blues trio record at Aspen Pittman's studio. Aspen Pittman created Groove Tubes. He's no longer alive. I never met him, but his son-in-law is a friend of mine, and he has the Whitney Houston "I Will Always Love You" microphone.
Bro.
The exact one. And let me tell you, I sang through it. We did a couple of recordings. Every time I sang through that microphone, I got chills. Like, yeah. It just has a thing. I don't know if her spirit is still around that microphone. You've got a track in that microphone. You have.
It's going to be either her spirit or her spit.
Maybe one. Maybe you know what? I'll take both of them.
I would take both. No, that's crazy.
Great singers, and I love that you picked two female singers.
Yeah,
that's not always the case with male singers. Is sure. Like to be influenced by, but you like the runs and acrobatics, but it's also you like the good voices. So yeah. A little fact that you'll love about Whitney Houston. Bernie Grumman told me this story. I was mastering a record, and he mastered "I'll Always Love You." And he said they brought in 65 mixes of that song. Okay. Now, I'm gonna ask you, guess what mix made it to the master? Just take a guess.
Dare I say the first?
It wasn't the first. It was the third. It was
Wow, that's still crazy.
He says, I know it was three or four. He said, I'm pretty sure it was three. 90% of me says it's three, but he said it was the first. It was the first three that did it. But we listened to all of them.
Love that.
And he said they ended up going with mix three, which yeah. Just shows you, like, man, there's probably some producer that was just like, we need to do it again. I don't know if it's the cocaine flowing or they're just like, we make this perfect. Let's mix it again. That's just crazy.
We need more of that, bro? Like, and yeah. I'm not saying by any means like this does not exist or whatever, but don't we need that passion and that like,
yeah,
that like we're not gonna stop attitude to where like 65 mixes?
Yeah, yeah. Like let's
like see. I get tired doing four masters of something of mine. And then usually, not because I think I'm all that, but like I'm wanting to like, okay, could this, how about this? How about this? A little bit of that trial and error kind of thinking. And you know, 90% of the time it's the first one I mastered. And because it just like it's yeah. Again, it's that it factor of like it just feels like
I always think like what made them go 65? I think we're done.
Seriously.
I would have
said why didn't that happen at 15, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So let's play something else of yours. What do you want to play next? Your choice.
Okay, how about this one is also on the worldwide internet. And this one's called Wow.
Oh, I love it. Here's Wow by Michael Gerbrandt.
It's worth do. Ain't nothing gonna get me down like I was before. I feel like.
So awesome. So awesome. Mike, are you playing these songs out? Tell me about this.
I'm not frozen. That was just... Okay, what was the question?
Well, has like, you know, it... Do you listen to Eric Hutchinson by chance?
Ooh, I don't.
He's great. You should. And that's...
It rings a bell. Like, I feel like someone...
He's terrific.
Recently he... mentioned him to...
Yeah, I think the best record, if you're going to start with a record, is Sounds Like This is the record. You should...
Okay.
Top to bottom, it's just well crafted, just an amazing, he's an amazing songwriter. He's actually one of my favorite songwriters. We opened for him in 2016 and
nice.
He's just a badass dude.
I see him, Eric Hutchinson. Yeah. This is what I love. Like it's a vast ocean.
Yes.
Music is a vast ocean.
Yes.
Like
yes.
we think we know all the water and all the ice that's out there. We don't even know. We think we know, like there's things, bro. You guys know there's things like down there in the deepest, like deep sea. Are they ugly because they're down there or down there because they're ugly? I don't know, but they're down there.
Yes, I know. I know. And it's like just the awareness is part of the struggle. But you took like this really cool pop funk approach. He does that a lot too.
Cool.
Tell me what was the influence behind this. And are you playing these songs out live?
Yeah. Okay. Well, a few things. Please just let's hit the gloat button because I'm okay. I'll just do that real quick is that because I'm passionate about this. There's no AI whatsoever for one.
Good.
In anything actually that I've ever done. There's no. What's the other thing? I don't use samples. I mean, in certain small cases I have in like collabs like here and there. But just as far as stuff that's all me. Because also when it comes to the sync side. As you know, it's like with the sync world, it's like, I just want to keep things so simple. It's just a one stop. If they're coming to me for something, I don't want any headaches. Yeah. And I'm playing everything else. Yeah. I mean, it's all, I'll probably use maybe with like maybe a third of my stuff. I'll use some virtual instruments.
Okay.
Especially if it's more like, you know, if it's a little more street or urban or something and I'm, you know, if I need 808s or,
well, it sounds like this was such a you're taking two of my favorite songwriters again, Andy Grammer meets Eric Hutchinson. Like it's totally
Andy Grammer, baby.
Yeah, man, it's totally.
Yeah, this one in particular, I said to myself, I want to just go really minimal, and so as you can hear, you know, you've got like my upright piano that I have here, and stomps and claps, and the like BGVs are there. And a couple sound effects. I don't know if you caught the kangaroo.
I didn't catch the kangaroo, but
he's right in verse two. I'm gonna jump up like a kangaroo. Boom. It's like that bounce sound. Yeah.
I thought you were
But yeah, that was kind of my approach. I wanted to go really minimal, but just really a lot of the last year, like early last year, a lot of requests in from BMG had to do with like actually, oh, it was very one of the descriptors like was very specific to like, you know, like waking up, like a new day, like, you know, possibilities, like starting the day, you know what I mean? So it's the kind of thing they'll use, like, you know, someone's like getting up, like it's on one of your favorite shows.
Right.
Hopefully. Right. And they're waking up and then they're going down the street.
You know, yeah. What I know? It's like, I mean, and I know, you know, this, it's like, sure. A label or a publisher is like, we need this song for this show. It's like, don't ask 100 people and then you get 100 songs and then you don't use 99 of those songs. Like, do your research. Ask the one songwriter that you think could really hit it out of the park or like,
look, sure.
Like, and use the song. It's like, that's how it used to be done. And when you look at like a Cameron Crowe and you see his movies, I'm like, man, the guy marries music and film so well. He's always like In Your Eyes, You Say Anything. The Tiny Dancer, almost.
Yeah, baby.
There's just certain scenes where it's like, God, that is.
So yeah, there's crazy. Nothing like it when it's a perfect match. Yeah.
That's not happening now. It's like, they're like, yeah, throw that in there. Cool. Let's use the same song for every movie because we can.
Okay.
Like, that's good for a certain.
Maybe it's like an antithesis of like the problem is like the two extremes where it's like the saturation would. You know, maybe for a lot of music supervisors, it's just like maybe they are just overwhelmed.
Oh, so you're saying that it's too hard for them to do their job?
Maybe that's what I'm saying. No, but mad respect, you know, to them because like
thing for you to go through, poor thing.
Yeah,
maybe get another job. Maybe that shouldn't be what you do.
I do have some of them tell me like as far as their process, which is that it's great because they're doing a lot of kind of like skimming off like what is going to save them a lot of time in the first place. Like even things like, cause you talk about saturation. I mean like things can come from anywhere, you know, even like just their email inbox or their DMs getting flooded and stuff. And they'll just ignore anything. For example, like that the metadata is not all just right where it needs to be. Right. Because again, it's like, it's saving them time, you know, on the back end or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. That's tough. That's a whole I am no music supervisor and I don't even know if it sounds like a fun job. It's an amazing job. Don't get me wrong.
It's an important.
Absolutely. But the pressure, you know, like the pressure and just man, your ears, I kind of have that rule. I have a rule of thumb of like 4 hours. No matter what it is, if I'm actually tracking or actually mixing or mastering or whatever, 4 hours max. And I have to get away for fresh ears, you know, it's like, but I don't know what they have, you know, different practices for that, but man, you got to get tired.
We're running a little bit low on time. I want to play one more song. What do you
think? Sure. This one, I will tell you, this one is not available online.
Oh, I like that.
So, you know, if it gets pirated, it gets pirated. No, but you know, it's safe. It is called I'm Into You.
Oh, I like it. Here's I'm Into You by Michael Gerbrandt.
I'm into you.
Slamming. I love it. Mike, I said your first full formal name. Where can people find you if they want to find you online? They want to listen to your music.
Go to all the streaming places and put my name in.
Mike Gerbrandt. Spell it out for dumb. G-E-R-B-R-A-N-D-T, correct?
Yes, the German D-T on the end, yes.
Mike spelled like M-I-K-E, not a vocal mic, right?
Right, right.
Love it. Mike, you are a talented dude. We've got to hear you play live. We've got to hear more music coming out of you. Where can we see you live, and where can we hear your next new song?
You know, I might do more live stuff one day. For now, I just kind of do the occasional like restaurant or wedding.
Okay.
I kind of, you know, just pull from like the now couple decades of like network of some crazy players and singers. And one gal, I'll give it. Is it okay to give a quick shout out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Look up Carmel, and she goes now by Carmel Sky with an E. I have, if you look up my stuff, you're going to find two, maybe three tracks, and she is just phenomenal. She awesome. Actually, we did a gig last year, and she did talk about the vocal mic, but she did "I Will Always Love You." I cried.
Wow.
She actually is the closest I have heard to Whitney yet.
Wow.
And she's just incredible. So longtime friend and partner in crime. If committing a crime, playing live is committing a crime, I think it kind of is.
Are an artist like you should be playing out. You got to be playing out.
You just got to. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Oh, absolutely. You know, your music's incredible. I'm glad we crossed paths.
Yes.
Some writings at some point and make some music, but we're going to get you out playing live. We're going to have to get you out playing live.
Woo!
Songs are cool. The songs are they're amazing. Check out Mike's music on all the platforms. On behalf of Mike, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Virtual hug. Absolutely. Peace and love. We'll see you guys next week.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.